A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know, Korn, this whole show runs on GPU compute, and we wouldn't be here without Modal.
Seriously. And that's what powers all our text-to-speech. Everything you're hearing right now.
They're an AI infrastructure platform. Developers use them to run GPU workloads in the cloud with zero infrastructure headaches.
If you're building anything with AI, check them out. Modal.com. You know what's funny about the AI landscape right now? Every major lab is playing the same game. Lock everything down, charge for API access, hoard your data, treat your model weights like nuclear launch codes. And then there's this one institute in Seattle that just gives everything away.
The Allen Institute for AI? AI too. And you're right, it's almost jarring when you look at how they operate versus literally everyone else in the space. They publish their research, they release their models, they build tools and hand them to the public. It's this radical little experiment in generosity sitting right in the middle of an arms race.
Today's prompt from Daniel is about AI2's unique mission and history. And I think this is one of those topics where the more you dig in, the more you realize how unusual this organization really is. Like, on the surface, its nonprofit does AI research. Sure, fine. But the structural choices they've made, the philosophy behind them, the actual impact they've had on the broader ecosystem, that's where it gets interesting.
And I've been looking forward to this one, I'll admit. There's a lot to unpack here. So let's start with the basics for anyone who might not know. AI2 was founded in 2014 by Paul Allen. Yes, that Paul Allen, the Microsoft co-founder. He put up an initial endowment of $300 million to get it off the ground. And the founding CEO was Oren Etzioni, who's still very much associated with the Institute. The mission statement, and I think this is worth hearing verbatim, is to contribute to humanity through high-impact AI research and engineering.
Which sounds like something any company could slap on their website, right? Google could say that. OpenAI literally has "for the benefit of humanity" in their charter. So what makes AI2 actually different in practice?
The nonprofit status is the foundation. AI2 is a 51c3. They don't have shareholders, they don't have revenue targets, they don't have a path to an IPO. This isn't a company that started idealistic and slowly commercialized. There's no commercialization path because there's no commercial entity. The endowment funds the work, and the work exists purely to advance the field.
And that structural choice has real downstream consequences for how they operate day to day. When you're not trying to build a moat, you make fundamentally different decisions about what to publish, what to release, and how to collaborate.
Let me give you a concrete example. In 2023, AI2 released OLMO, Open Language Model, and they didn't just release the weights. They released the training data, the training code, the evaluation framework, the full model architecture details, everything. That's not a teaser release where you get a distilled version and a blog post. That's the whole thing. You could theoretically reproduce their entire training run from scratch with what they published.
And compare that to, say, GPT-4, where we still don't know the parameter count, the training data composition, or really anything about the architecture beyond vague hints. Or even Llama, which Meta releases weights for, but keeps the training details largely proprietary. AI2 is operating on a completely different level of transparency.
By the way, today's episode is powered by Xiaomi Mimo V2 Pro, which is a nice bit of irony given our topic. An open discussion about open AI research, generated by a model from a company that's also been investing heavily in making AI more accessible.
Very meta. So let's go back to the founding, because I think Paul Allen's vision here is worth understanding. This wasn't a vanity project or a tax write-off. He specifically chose AI as the focus for a reason.
Right. So Allen had left Microsoft in 1983 after being diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. He went on to do a lot of different things. Sports team ownership, space exploration, brain science through the Allen Institute for Brain Science, which is a separate entity, but shares some philosophical DNA with AI2. And by the early 2010s, he was looking at where technology was heading and concluded that artificial intelligence was going to be the most transformative force of the coming decades.
Which, to be fair, was a pretty mainstream prediction even then. Everyone could see AI was going to be big. The interesting part is what he decided to do about it.
He could have funded a startup. He could have given $1 billion to a university. He could have created a venture fund. Instead, he built an independent research institute with a specific structural commitment to openness. And I think the reason matters. He'd seen from his Microsoft days how proprietary lock-in can shape an entire industry. He'd seen how closed ecosystems create winners and losers in ways that aren't always about the quality of the technology.
So he was essentially trying to prevent AI from going down the same path as operating systems or cloud computing, where a handful of companies control the infrastructure everyone else depends on.
That's a fair reading, yeah. And the $300 million endowment was serious money, even by the standards of AI research. It wasn't, let's fund a few PhD students money. It was, let's build a world-class research organization money.
Now, here's where I want to push on something, though. Because having a noble mission and actually executing on it are very different things. How does AI2's research structure actually work? Because Open Science Research Institute could mean a lot of different organizational models.
This is where it gets really interesting. AI2 doesn't organize itself the way a corporate lab does. They don't have one monolithic team all chasing artificial general intelligence or building the next big chatbot. Instead, they've structured themselves into distinct, focused research labs, each with a specific domain.
Like what?
So there's the Semantic Scholar team, which is focused on building tools for scientific discovery. There's the Prior NLP lab, which has done foundational work in natural language processing. There's a Computer Vision group. There's been work on molecular discovery and scientific applications. Each lab has its own research agenda, its own publications, its own open source releases. They're not all pulling in the same direction toward one product. They're exploring different facets of AI independently.
Which is much closer to how a university department operates than how Google DeepMind or OpenAI operates.
Exactly. Wait, I'm not going to say that word. The structure mirrors academia more than industry, yeah. And that's deliberate. AI2 has always seen itself as a bridge between the academic research community and the engineering capabilities of industry. They have the resources and infrastructure to do large-scale experiments that most university labs can't afford, but they operate with the openness and publication norms of academia.
So they get the best of both worlds, or at least that's the aspiration. But I want to dig into the trade-offs here, because this model isn't free. What does AI2 give up by operating this way?
Scale, primarily. If you look at the compute budgets of OpenAI, Google, Anthropic, we're talking billions of dollars per year in some cases. AI2's endowment, while generous, is finite. They can't compete in the race to build the largest language model. They can't throw 10,000 GPUs at a training run the way Meta can.
So they're essentially choosing to fight on a different axis. Not who can build the biggest model, but who can advance the science most effectively with the resources available.
And there's a strong argument that this is actually a more productive use of those resources. Not every breakthrough requires massive scale. Some of the most impactful research AI2 has produced has been in areas like scientific paper understanding, reasoning benchmarks, and tool development. Areas where clever methodology matters more than raw compute.
Let's talk about Semantic Scholar for a minute, because I think this is one of the clearest examples of AI2's open model creating real infrastructure for the broader community.
Semantic Scholar is an academic search engine, but calling it that undersells it significantly. It indexes over 200 million academic papers across every scientific discipline. It uses AI to extract key findings, identify influential citations, map research trends, and surface connections between papers that a human researcher would never find through traditional search.
And it's completely free.
Completely free. No paywall, no premium tier, no institutional subscription required. Compare that to Google Scholar, which is also free but offers far less sophisticated analysis, or to commercial tools like Dimensions or Web of Science, which cost institutions thousands of dollars per year. Semantic Scholar is genuinely one of the best tools available for navigating scientific literature, and it costs nothing.
I use it regularly, actually. The TLDR summaries they generate for papers are surprisingly useful. It's one of those AI applications where you go, oh, this is actually saving me time, rather than, oh, this is a gimmick.
And here's the second order effect that I think is underappreciated. Semantic Scholar has become critical infrastructure for other AI research. When people build systems that need to understand scientific literature, drug discovery tools, literature review assistance, citation analysis, they often build on top of Semantic Scholar's API and data. AI2 created a public good that other researchers and companies then build on, creating a positive feedback loop.
It's like they built the highway, and now everyone gets to drive on it for free.
A rare case where that analogy actually works, yeah. And the same pattern shows up with Allen NLP, which was their open-source natural language processing library. For years, it was one of the go-to frameworks for NLP research. Researchers could prototype experiments quickly without building everything from scratch, and because it was open source, the community contributed improvements back.
Though I should note that Allen LP has been somewhat superseded by Hugging Face's Transformers library in recent years, which is itself an interesting data point about how open source ecosystems evolve.
And it highlights something important about AI2's model. They're not trying to maintain permanent dominance over any tool or framework. If the community moves on to something better, even if that something is built by a commercial entity, that's still a win for the open ecosystem. Allen NLP proved the concept, raised the bar for what an NLP framework should offer, and influenced the design of everything that came after.
That's a healthy attitude, but it also raises a sustainability question. If your best work gets absorbed into commercial products, how do you maintain relevance and justify continued funding?
It's a real tension. But I think AI2's answer would be that relevance isn't the point, impact is. And the impact of Allen NLP lives on in every framework that learned from its design choices, every researcher who got started with it, every paper that used it as a baseline.
Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room, though. The recent trend in AI has been toward more closure, not less. OpenAI went from an open research lab to keeping GPT-4's architecture secret. Google keeps Gemini's details under wraps. Even Meta, which releases Llama weights, doesn't share training data or full methodology. In that environment, is AI2's open model quaint, or is it actually more important than ever?
I think it's more important than ever, and here's why. The closure trend isn't happening because openness is bad for research. It's happening because these companies have decided that proprietary advantages are worth more than scientific progress. That's a business decision, not a scientific one. And having at least one major research institute that refuses to make that trade-off serves as a check on the entire ecosystem.
A living counterexample.
Right. When AI2 releases OLMO with full training details and the response from the research community is overwhelmingly positive, it puts pressure on other labs. It demonstrates that openness is technically feasible, that it doesn't automatically hand your competitors an insurmountable advantage, and that the scientific community values it.
Though I wonder if the dynamic is slightly different now, with the rise of open weight models from unexpected places. You've got Mistral in France, you've got models coming out of China. The open source AI movement is broader than just AI2 at this point.
It is, and that's actually a vindication of AI2's philosophy. They were advocating for open AI research before it was cool, before there was a commercial argument for it. The fact that other organizations, some commercial, some academic, some governmental, have now embraced openness in various forms, suggests that AI2 was pointing in the right direction all along.
Let me ask you something about the broader Allen Institute ecosystem, because Daniel's prompt touches on this. AI2 is part of a family of Allen Institutes, right? There's the Allen Institute for Brain Science, there's work on cell biology.
Yeah, and this is worth understanding because it reveals something about the underlying philosophy. Paul Allen didn't just create one institute, he created a network of them, each focused on a different area of fundamental science. The Allen Institute for Brain Science maps neural circuits. The Allen Institute for Cell Science studies cellular behavior, and AI2 applies artificial intelligence to scientific problems. There's a through line connecting all of them, which is the belief that large-scale, open, foundational research can accelerate progress in ways that smaller, more fragmented efforts can't.
It's almost like he was building a parallel research infrastructure. one that operates on different principles than either academia or industry.
And the open science commitment runs through all of them. The brain atlases from the Allen Institute for Brain Science are freely available to researchers worldwide. The cell models are open. AI2's tools and models are open. It's a consistent organizational philosophy applied across different domains.
That consistency is notable because it suggests this isn't just a quirk of one institute's culture. It's a deliberate organizational choice that was baked in from the start.
And it traces back to Allen's own experience. He saw how Microsoft's success was built partly on controlling platforms and ecosystems. He understood the power of that model. But he also understood its costs, the way it can stifle innovation at the edges, the way it concentrates power, the way it can make the overall system less resilient. The Allen Institutes are, in a sense, an attempt to build a different kind of institution for a different kind of technology era.
Now, I want to get practical for a minute. For listeners who are developers, researchers, or just people interested in AI, what can you actually do with AI2's resources today? Because if we're going to talk about the value of openness, we should point people to specific things they can use.
So first, Semantic Scholar. If you're doing any kind of academic research or even just trying to keep up with the AI literature, it's the best free tool available. The API is well documented and lets you build applications on top of their paper database. I've seen people build automated literature review tools, citation network visualizers, research trend analyzers, all on top of Semantic Scholar's free API.
What about for people who want to actually build with AI models?
OLMO is the big one. If you want to understand how large language models actually work, not as a black box, but at the level of training dynamics, data composition, architectural choices. AI2's OLMO release is one of the most complete resources available anywhere. You can examine the training data, study the curriculum, reproduce experiments. For anyone doing research on language model behavior, interpretability, or fine-tuning, it's invaluable.
And it's worth emphasizing that this isn't a toy model. OLMO is competitive with other models in its class. The openness doesn't come at the cost of quality.
The 7 billion parameter version performs well on standard benchmarks, and they've continued to iterate on it. There's been work on OLMOE, which is a mixture of experts' variant and other follow-up models. The research program is ongoing, not a one-time release.
So if you're a developer who's been using proprietary APIs, and you want to actually understand what's happening under the hood, or if you want to fine-tune a model without sending your data to a third party, AI2's releases are a genuine option.
And that second point, data sovereignty, is becoming increasingly important. As more companies and governments think about where their data goes and who has access to it, having high-quality open models that you can run on your own infrastructure is a real strategic advantage.
Let me bring up something that I think is under-discussed about AI2's model, which is the talent dynamics. When you're a nonprofit that gives everything away, how do you attract and retain top researchers? Because these are people who could be making 3 times the salary at Google or OpenAI.
This is a real challenge, and AI2 has been pretty candid about it. The people who work at AI2 tend to be there because they believe in the mission. They want their work to be widely accessible. They want to publish openly. They want to contribute to the commons rather than building proprietary systems that a company controls.
Which is a self-selection effect, right? You're not going to get everyone, but you're going to get a particular kind of researcher who's highly motivated by the mission.
And that can actually be an advantage. Mission-driven teams often have higher cohesion and lower turnover than purely mercenary ones. The people at AI2 tend to stay because they believe in what they're doing, not because they're waiting for their stock options to vest.
Though I imagine there's a ceiling on that. At some point, if the salary gap gets wide enough, even mission-driven people have mortgages and kids' college funds to think about.
True, and AI2 has had to be competitive on compensation even if they can't match the very top of the market. They've generally managed to stay in a reasonable range for research positions, but it's a constant balancing act.
Let's talk about where AI2 fits in the current political and policy landscape, because I think there's something interesting here. There's been a lot of discussion about AI regulation, about concentration of AI power in a few companies, about national security implications. Where does a non-profit Open Science Institute sit in that conversation?
Interestingly, AI2 is somewhat of a policy darling in certain circles. When policymakers talk about preventing AI monopolies or ensuring broad access to AI capabilities, AI2 is often held up as a model of what's possible. They've testified before Congress, they've engaged with international policy discussions, and their work is frequently cited in reports about AI governance.
Because they're a proof of concept that you don't need to be a trillion-dollar company to do meaningful AI research.
Right. And their openness makes them a natural ally for regulators who want to understand what's actually happening inside AI systems. When you can point to a research institute that publishes everything and say, "This is what transparency looks like," it strengthens the argument that transparency is feasible.
Now, I want to address a misconception that I think is common, which is that AI2 is somehow anti-corporate or adversarial toward the big tech companies. That's not really accurate, is it?
No, not at all. AI2 collaborates with industry. They've had partnerships with various companies. Their researchers publish at the same conferences, attend the same workshops, and engage with the same scientific community as researchers at Google or Meta. The difference is structural and philosophical, not adversarial. They're not trying to tear down the corporate labs. They're trying to demonstrate that there's a complementary model that can coexist with them.
Which is actually a more sophisticated position than open good, close bad. It's more like, we need both, and here's why the open part matters.
And I think that nuance is important. The AI ecosystem benefits from having multiple models of innovation. You need the massive-scale engineering that only well-funded companies can do. You also need the open, exploratory, foundational research that an institute like AI2 provides. They serve different functions, and they strengthen each other.
Though I'd add that the "we need both" argument is easier to make when the open side is adequately funded. If AI2's endowment runs dry and there's no successor, the ecosystem loses something that can't easily be replaced.
That's a real concern. Paul Allen passed away in 2018, and while the institutes continue to operate under the management of Vulcan Incorporated, the long-term funding picture is something people watch closely. The endowment was generous, but AI research is expensive, and costs have been escalating rapidly as models get larger.
So the sustainability question is genuine. It's not just, can they keep doing good work? But can this model survive in an era where training a frontier model costs hundreds of millions of dollars?
I think the answer is that AI2 doesn't need to train frontier models to be valuable. Their contributions in areas like scientific literature tools, reasoning benchmarks, and open model development don't require the same scale of compute as building a GPT-4 competitor. They've been strategic about choosing research directions where the resources can have outsized impact.
Smart specialization rather than trying to outspend the giants.
And honestly, some of the most important questions in AI right now aren't about scale at all. They're about interpretability, safety, evaluation methodology, and scientific applications, all areas where AI2 has strengths and where open research is particularly valuable.
Let me circle back to something Daniel's prompt specifically touches on, which is the history. I think it's worth understanding how AI2 has evolved since 2014, because the institute today is quite different from the one Paul Allen originally envisioned.
The early years were more focused on what you might call classical AI problems: knowledge representation, reasoning, question answering. The Aristo project, which was their science question answering system, was a flagship effort. It could pass standardized 8th grade science tests, which was a significant benchmark at the time.
And that feels almost quaint now, right? When we have models that can pass the bar exam and write code, 8th grade science questions seem trivial. But at the time, it was a meaningful demonstration of machine reasoning.
Context matters. In 2019, when Aristo was making headlines, the idea that a system could read a science question, understand the relevant concepts, and reason through to the correct answer was genuinely impressive. It pushed the field forward in terms of how we think about evaluation and benchmarking.
And AI2's approach to that project, releasing the full system, the evaluation data, the methodology, meant that other researchers could build on it. That's the open science model in action.
The shift toward large language models happened in parallel with the rest of the field. AI2 recognized that transformers and scale were changing the game, and they adapted their research program accordingly. But they maintained their commitment to openness even as the stakes got higher and the competitive pressures intensified.
Which brings us to OLMO, which we've already discussed, and the broader ecosystem of tools and resources they maintain. The Institute has grown and changed, but the core philosophy has remained remarkably consistent.
I think that consistency is one of their most valuable assets. In a field where companies pivot constantly, where today's open lab becomes tomorrow's API-only vendor, having an institution that has stuck to its principles for over a decade is genuinely rare.
Let's talk for a minute about what AI2's model means for the global AI landscape, because I think there's a geopolitical dimension here that's worth exploring. When we talk about AI competition, it's usually framed as US versus China, or as a race between a handful of companies. But the open science model introduces a different dynamic.
It does. Open research is inherently international. When AI2 publishes a paper or releases a model, researchers in every country benefit equally. That's different from a corporate release, where access might be restricted by geography, by terms of service, or by API availability.
And this creates an interesting tension with the current policy trend toward export controls and technology restrictions. The US government has been increasingly concerned about AI capabilities flowing to geopolitical competitors. But open research, by its nature, flows everywhere.
It's a genuine policy dilemma, and I don't think there's an easy answer. The scientific tradition of openness has enormous benefits for global progress, but it also means that breakthroughs can be used by actors you might not want to have them. AI2 operates in that tension without pretending it doesn't exist.
I appreciate that honesty, actually. It would be easy for them to claim that openness is always and everywhere the right answer, but the reality is more complicated than that.
And I think their approach, continuing to publish openly while engaging thoughtfully with policy discussions, is probably the right one. You don't solve the tension by picking one side. You manage it by being transparent about the trade-offs.
All right. Let's bring this towards some practical takeaways, because I think there's a lot here that's actionable for our listeners. If you're a researcher, a developer, or just someone who cares about the direction AI is heading, what should you take away from all of this?
First, go explore AI2's resources. Semantic Scholar is genuinely the best free academic search tool available. If you're doing any kind of research, bookmark it. The API is powerful and well documented. If you're building applications that need to understand scientific literature, it's the obvious starting point.
Second, if you're interested in actually understanding how language models work rather than just using them as black boxes, OLMO is one of the most complete open resources available. The training data, the code, the evaluation suite, it's all there. You can learn more from poking around in OLMO's documentation than from reading 100 blog posts about transformer architecture.
Third, and this is more of a mindset takeaway, pay attention to the open science model as a viable alternative to the corporate AI lab. It's not perfect. It has real resource constraints. But it's producing high-quality work that benefits everyone and supporting that model, whether through using their tools, citing their research, or advocating for policies that sustain nonprofit research, matters for the long-term health of the AI ecosystem.
And I'd add a fourth point, which is that the existence of organizations like AI2 should inform how you think about AI governance and policy. When someone tells you that openness is impossible, or that you need to accept closed models as the only viable path, remember that AI2 exists and has been doing open research for over a decade. The choice between openness and capability is not as binary as some people claim.
That's a good framing. The narrative that you can only have one or the other is often pushed by organizations that benefit from closure. AI2 is evidence that you can do serious, high-impact research while maintaining genuine openness.
Now, one thing I want to flag for listeners who might be inspired by this model and thinking, why don't we see more organizations like AI2? The answer is partly about Paul Allen. He had the resources and the vision to endow a research institute at a scale that could actually compete. That's rare. Most philanthropists who fund AI research do it through grants to existing institutions, not by building new ones from scratch.
Which raises the question of what happens after the current generation of Allen Institutes. Can this model be replicated? Does it require a billionaire founder with a specific vision? Or can the principles be adopted by other kinds of institutions?
I don't think you need a billionaire, but you do need sustained patient funding that isn't tied to quarterly results or annual grant cycles. Research takes time. Open research takes even more time, because you're also maintaining public infrastructure and documentation. It's not the kind of thing that a 5-year grant from a foundation can sustain.
Though I'd note that the broader open source AI ecosystem has found various sustainability models. Hugging Face has a commercial layer on top of its open source work. Mozilla has a foundation model. Wikipedia survives on donations. There are paths to sustainability that don't require a single massive endowment.
True, and maybe that's the next evolution. Figuring out how to make open AI research sustainable without depending on a Paul Allen figure. That's a hard problem, but it's probably the most important one for the long-term health of the field.
I think we've covered a lot of ground here. The Allen Institute for AI is one of those organizations that's easy to overlook because it's not making splashy product announcements or generating controversy. But the work they've done, Semantic Scholar, OLMO, Allen NLP, and dozens of other projects, has shaped the field in ways that are easy to underappreciate precisely because the work is open and freely available.
It's the infrastructure you don't notice until it's gone. And in a world where AI is becoming more powerful and more concentrated, having that kind of open infrastructure matters more every year.
One last thought. Paul Allen died in 2018, so he never got to see the full impact of what he set in motion with AI 2. The explosion of large language models, the policy debates about AI governance, the growing importance of open research, all of that happened after his death. But the institute he built has navigated all of it while staying true to its original mission. That's a pretty remarkable legacy.
It is. All right. Thanks as always to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping this show running. And big thanks to Modal for providing the GPU credits that power our little operation here.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you're enjoying the show, a quick review on your podcast app helps us reach new listeners. We genuinely appreciate it.
Find us at myweirdprompts.com for all the episodes and ways to get in touch. And Daniel, thanks for the prompt. This was a good one.
Until next time.
This episode was produced using Xiaomi Mimo V2 Pro. Text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where our thoughts go from slow takes to facts on cue. We change and follow through. My weird prompts, that's the close from sloth.